I wandered through the latticework of shadows and fallen blocks into the nave. The bishopric on Pochum had not mentioned any history of Catholicism on Hyperion, much less the presence of a cathedral. It is almost inconceivable that the scattered seedship colony of 4 centuries ago could have supported a large enough congregation to warrant the presence of a bishop, much less a cathedral. Yet there it was. I poked through the shadows of the sacristy. Dust and powdered plaster hung in the air like incense, outlining 2 shafts of sunlight streaming down from narrow windows high above. I stepped out into a broader patch of sunlight and approached an altar stripped of all decoration except for chips and cracks caused by falling masonry. The great cross, which had hung on the east wall behind the altar, had also fallen and now lay in ceramic splinters among the heap of stones there. Without conscious thought, I stepped behind the altar, raised my arms, and began the celebration of the Eucharist. There was no sense of parody or melodrama in this act, no symbolism or hidden intention. It was merely the automatic reaction of a priest who had said Mass almost daily for more than 46 years of his life, and who now faced the prospect of never again participating in the reassuring ritual of that celebration. It was with some shock that I realized I had a congregation. The old woman was kneeling in the 4th row of pews. The black of her dress and scarf blended so perfectly with the shadows there that only the pale oval of her face was visible, lined and ancient, floating disembodied in the darkness. Startled, I stopped speaking the litany of consecration. She was looking at me, but something about her eyes, even at a distance, instantly convinced me that she was blind. For a moment I could not speak and stood there mute, squinting in the dusty light bathing the altar, trying to explain this spectral image to myself, while at the same time attempting to frame an explanation of my own presence and actions. When I did find my voice and called to her, the words echoing in the great hall, I realized that she had moved. I could hear her feet scraping on the stone floor. There was a rasping sound, and then a brief flare of light illuminated her profile far to the right of the altar. I shielded my eyes from the shafts of sunlight and began picking my way over the detritus where the altar railing had once stood. I called to her again, offered reassurances, and told her not to be afraid, even though it was I who had chills coursing up my back. I moved quickly, but when I reached the sheltered corner of the nave, she was gone. A small door led to the crumbling chapter house and the river bank. There was no sight of her. I returned to the dark interior and would have gladly attributed her appearance to my imagination, a waking dream after so many months of enforced cryogenic dreamlessness, but for a single tangible proof of her presence. There in the cool darkness burned a lone red votive candle, its tiny flame flickering to unseen drafts and currents. I'm tired of this city. I'm tired of its pagan pretensions and false histories. Hyperion is a poet's world devoid of poetry. Keats itself is a mixture of tawdry, false classicism, and mindless, boomtown energy. There are 3 Zen Gnostic assemblies and 4 high Muslim mosques in the town. But the real houses of worship are the countless saloons and brothels, the huge marketplaces handling the fiber-plastic shipments from the south, and the shrike cult temples, where lost souls hide their suicidal hopelessness behind a shield of shallow mysticism. The whole planet reeks of mysticism without revelation. To hell with it. Tomorrow, I head south. There are skimmers and other aircraft on this absurd world, but for the common folk, travel between these accursed island continents seems restricted to boat, which takes forever, I am told. or one of the huge passenger dirigibles, which departs from Keats only once a week. I leave early tomorrow by dirigible.